Explain the different colored.
All these are this
cups
is
of different colored goo.
You buy little chocolate things. You got to be careful. So I melted these in the microwave. If you overdo it, it'll congeal and kind of turn into cottage cheese. So
have you tried cottage cheese?
I like cottage cheese. Okay. Look what's happening. This is what you don't want to have happen right there.
Maybe you're supposed to scrub up the stick to create some friction.
Oh, this is gonna be a problem.
Here we go.
Is it work?
No. Here. Oh yeah. I saw your show in New Haven.
Yeah.
And I was impressed by many, many things because I've not been to a live music show of that magnitude in a while. Mm-hmm. So everywhere you look is expensive equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and the band, and excuse me for pretending I know what this means, seem very tight.
Yeah.
And I thought, holy cow. And I love the horns. The music was just overwhelming. And I thought, wait a minute, how do you stay that way? Musically, am I right about this or am I just being a dope?
We've always been a good live band. When we started, it wasn't that easy to sort of just set up and record at home. And so it was mostly just practicing in a little room, and then you get as many gigs as possible, little things, and then the whole band would go into a studio and make a record as fast as they could. And we did that for a long time, but it's changed in some ways where you can stay home and just with your gear at home and a limit of things and make, you know, produce and master a record all without ever going into
a
studio.
That's what I'm doing. I'm working on
it. Are you working on the solo
first
album?
First 2 pages of Dracula. I have a million things in my head here, but I'm taken by, we have two very impressive collections of music. First 2 pages of Frankenstein and then Laugh Track.
Yeah.
And bang, bang, one on top of the other. Now, I'm no marketing genius, but should they have been put out simultaneously or should they have been put out with a little more distance between them? And which of that collection represents your stage of depression? And I love talking about depression yeah. because I've been through depression yeah. and I love nothing more than talking about things in my life.
Yeah.
So we have these two is like two dozen songs. And one is left over from the production of the first, more or less.
Well, the two records that we put out this year were all those songs were started around the same time. It was about a year into the pandemic and the shutdown where I went into it, you know, even more of a depression and a shutdown, and I wasn't writing at all. But they kept sending lots of music. So
were they aware of your situation?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 And I was pretty. I don't think they realized. Quite how sort of, you know, how debilitated
right.
I was.
People who yeah. have not experienced it don't know.
I mean, I also didn't tell them. You know, I didn't really tell them that I was quite as bad.
Mind talking about it now? Because it's
no.
been, I know you've talked about it in the past.
Yeah.
This was so stupid. I'm at your show in New
yeah.
Haven. And there is you and the band and your wife and your daughter. And I start talking to you moments before you go on stage about the depression.
No,
and later my wife is saying to me, really, that's all you could think of to talk about?
Well,
I'm sorry.
I was really happy that you wanted to talk about that right away because
before you go on stage.
Well, going on stage, I've written about depression. You know, and I've written about, you know, whatever, just emotional turmoil and it's all that kind of stuff. I've written about it a lot, and I've known that it's a part of me, you know, and I've known it since, you know, that it kind of comes and goes, and it's always been a very, very healthy way for me to sort of like make something out of it and to get on the other side of it is making
well
a
once
great
you
song.
Once you sink into it and understand what it is and recognize the struggle to overcome it, mm-hmm. then if it revisits you later, it doesn't buckle your legs.
It's
you,
not
you kind
as,
of know, oh, here, this is again.
Yeah.
I think I can navigate this now.
Yeah.
How long did this last?
I would say a year, but like the really the part where it was like it was I was just like I knew that I was like I'm sick, you know. Mm-hmm. this is like a terrible flu.
What was the family like for this? Understanding or not quite getting
it? No, Corinne and Isla, you know, and my brother, they were around a lot.
Tom.
And they were my brother Tom. They were all incredibly patient and mm-hmm. helpful, and I was hard to be around. You know, I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to watch television. You know,
I'm hard to be around. Happy.
right. Well, the funny thing was, at first everybody was a little relieved because I had been kind of manic for a long time and doing a lot of projects, and I was burning out and I was kind of mm-hmm. spinning out, and so. When the lockdown happened and everything shut down, and then I had to, you know, put down a lot of projects, there was a phase of that where there was a huge relief, you know, and
yeah, so maybe the sum total of the activity helped tamp you down.
Everything slowing down was good for a while, but then and after a little while, without getting together with the band, without going out and doing any touring, without actually being able to get in together in the studio, that, and then putting down all those other projects, I started to feel like, you know, this phase, like, I don't know if I, is this ever going to come mm-hmm. back?
Right.
I remember thinking, like, I don't know if I even want it to come back,
right.
Because the state I was in before with spinning all these plates and doing all this stuff, I wasn't really that happy, and I wasn't mm-hmm. that pleasant, you know. And I was at this phase where, like, I didn't know if it was a good idea for me to go back on tour or do that life anymore. But I didn't know what else. I didn't have any idea what else I wanted to do. So there were three months or so where it was like, you know, it was like hard to leave the bedroom. You know.
When I had my little dip into this, I heard it described. Because that's all you can really consider is what is this, when will it leave, and what can I do about it.
Yeah.
But the description was, the depression is life, is actual human existence with 20/20 vision. Mm. You're seeing the real thing, and it's a mechanism in you that keeps you away from that. I don't know. That's a pretty scary notion.
You mean it's saying that, like
you're seeing the real thing when you're depressed.
So when you're not depressed, you're somehow like
you're being fooled. Yeah,
I it's funny. I found that when I was most depressed, and the weirdest part is like I was aware of that my logic was flawed. Things that were good and things that were positive, things that normally that you should be happy about that, for some reason your brain could not see that was a good thing.
Yeah,
it just everything felt like a failure.
Yeah.
None of it is as bad as I'm feeling. You know, it's like there's nothing wrong with water until you're under it.
Yeah, that's right.
An inch too far under it, you know?
The thing that helped me, and it maybe the only thing that helped me, was this guy, the doctor, the psychiatrist. He said, typically, these things self-right in a year. And that scared the crap out of me because I thought, I don't have a year of this in me.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, I thought, okay.
Did it last a year?
No, it did not. Luckily, it lasted about half a year.
In that half a year, though, it was it was distinctly different than other phases of depression. Or have you always been kind of
always moody, sort of blue. And and I as I listened to more and more of your music, I realized that's typically the it's such a complimentary feeling to me. Some of these beautiful melodies and thoughtful, interesting, quizzical lyrics, pretty much how I feel all the time.
There was one thing I would ask you, because I've heard you talk about because I think I think one of the things that did the most of the number on me over like the long period of time of being in a band was having to kind of turn on a personality for an intense few hours,
mm-hmm.
And then turn it off,
mm-hmm.
and then try to get some sleep or do whatever you think,
yep.
and then again the next day turn it on, turn it off, and
yep.
I think for me it was that's why like, it was the touring and those constantly being on, then having to shut down, was, I think that's where wires got crisscrossed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard you talk, you know, the number, the 30 plus years that you were doing television shows and 4 or 5 shows a week, and I feel like I heard you, you know, when you're talking to the Strike Force 5 guys, and who are all doing the job that you used to do. And you sounded like you were saying, how long have you all done this? Be careful, it'll sneak up on you, and it'll mess with you and won't know it.
Right.
And I do feel like that was a big part of it, this thing of like having to be on, then be off, and then you get lost in the middle.
I had to work every day right through it.
And
it was holy hell, because it never left. It was like having somebody on your back, and you know, just you're carrying it around with you, and you're on television with it.
Was there somewhere in that phase where you're like, this might not be the healthiest thing for me, how do I do it better?
Well, when I started, that's all you care about. You stare at it, you breathe it, you eat it, and the field of focus gets narrower and tighter to the exclusion of your greater life.
Yeah.
And there was a certain point that never dawned on me till I left it. And when I left it, I looked back at things I did and the way I behaved and the way I felt as being trivial and incidental to actual life. But I stuck around because I wouldn't know what else to do. And it's like that. If things go great, you feel great. And if things don't go great, we get to try it again the next day. I don't have that in my life.
Uh-huh.
Like, to me, coming here to talk to you is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying this greatly.
I've been finding, like, I know you have to find ways that if you're gonna do this thing and like you know, be this big personality and then also be a healthy, normal person.
Yeah, no, that you can forget that.
Yeah, right.
I think that the guys I was talking to, I think do a better job of it, because I look at these guys and they seem just pretty well put together.
Yeah,
just like wallpaper. They're decent human beings, and that's exactly who you see on their shows.
Uh-huh.
I felt like I was pretending. I often just felt like, try to remember what Johnny Carson was like and sort of try to pretend to be him. Because I in retrospect, I look at stuff and it makes me wince. I think, oh, why this, why that?
I've watched My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, your other show. Did you design that show just in a way that was like, I'm going to do the part about it I like?
That was, I wanted to continue to do something. I didn't want to have to do it 5 days a week.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
So, and this way, like today, you and I are talking, oh, hell, it's going on 8 hours. He pretends to look at a watch. It could be longer. And then I would just turn it over to the editors. But it was just being able to talk with somebody and having an audience, and that would, you know, that helped.
Yeah.
That's how you feel like you're worth something.
When I first came back into the studio after not seeing anybody, I was in one of these states. I was physically just deflated, just crumpled, just like my posture, I was not nonverbal, but close to it, you know, where you just like, you can barely hold any kind of conversation. And so we needed to move forward. We needed to put a record out. We needed to get this whole, all these 25 people, we all needed to get back to work. Yeah. Everybody needed it. And I was the thing stopping
it. You bring up something now that I recognize, and anybody knows this, but I recognize it when I was at the show in New Haven. This is such a tremendous mechanism. You get to work together with friends. Obviously, 25 years is not people you don't like. You get to work with these people and create something that you're satisfied with and excited with and good at. And then you get to take that and present it to like 10,000 people at this the New Haven. To be part of that must be endlessly satisfying.
It's like every phase of it is like getting one song done is incredibly thrilling. And then pulling enough together to make a record and then trying to figure out what the cover is going to be and all that stuff. It's just, it is the most fun I have making anything. These two records are, I think, different from our other records because they were very much sort of fragments of us, you know, the lights were just slowly turning on, you know, the electricity and the alchemy of our band was slowly reconnecting.
Well, one more experience when I was in New Haven, the song Space Invader.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like it's, and I recognize this in other material, it seems like we have two different songs.
Mm-hmm.
The Space Invader part, and then it's like a storm is slowly brewing, and you forget you don't hear the lyrics anymore. Mm-hmm. And it, this crescendo, this powerful, roiling crescendo, is elevating. It was it was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, how do you decide that will be what the rest of that song is? Uh-huh. How do you decide that's what we're going to do to finish this song? Because it was amazing, you know, just that, levitating.
Almost. Yeah, it's like what's interesting about the two records we made is that a lot of the songs were written and developed before we could ever get back on a stage, and they have that studio DNA to them. They feel. And we embrace that when we're in that mode where it's like very much sort of architected in a closed, quiet space. You know, I with headphones on. I love music that's made that way. So a lot of the record is made that way. But then when we did start playing live and some of the songs, playing them live and being together on stage, whether it's sound checks or during the shows, and everybody starts to just really get connected. And so a lot of the songs just bloom. And the whole ending of Space Invader came from being together back as a band live. And then a number of different songs, especially the second half, Laugh Track. I look at the two records as two halves of a big double thing. But that the energy of our... The alchemy of the band really started coming back finally by being out there on the road. So the end of Space Invader is very much just like you start to some songs, and then there's another one called Smoke Detector that just kind of really go off the rails.
Smoke Detector.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask you about Smoke Detector? Pharmacy Slippers.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, this is so impressive because it conjures up nothing good.
Yeah.
If you're wearing pharmacy slippers, something god-awful is before you, behind you.
Yeah.
Pharmacy slippers.
Yeah, I like that too.
Take us down pharmacy slippers.
Well, there's a lot of little, I was you know, in that deep depression, I was well aware that like, I need to take some action. This is not, I can't just wait for this to pass. Mm-hmm. And so there was a moment, a lot of times you think like, all right, I'll feel better next, you know, tomorrow or something.
Yeah, it's
like that.
Hopeful. But, you try to be hopeful. Sure.
But then I reached a point where like, nope, I can't do this alone. And so, yeah, I was seeing psychiatrists, and I was trying the different cocktails of antidepressants and all this kind of stuff. And I was in Rite Aid a lot. You know, I mean,
I was hoping it was Duane Reade. I don't know why, but they say, Mr. Berninger, have you tried on the pharmacy slippers? I mean, how do you connect with pharmacy slippers?
Yeah, when you're in a pharmacy under the fluorescent lights, you know, waiting for your antidepressant, you know, and I remember even when I was in the worst pace, like I had a really hard time even just going to a pharmacy like that. And
hard time leaving the house is my recollection.
Yeah.
I doubt that there's a piece in the history of music, recorded or otherwise, that probably doesn't appear as a lyric anywhere.
I'm always trying to like show this that there's a silly side to everything that's pathetic and heartbreaking, and there's something comical about what a mess I was, you know, and being surprised that like wow, how could I have slipped this into this messy of a mental place?
It's discovering a room in the house you didn't know you had.
Yeah,
you just didn't know that. And before that, my experience was I'm kind of depressed. How come Price is Right isn't on? It would be that level of thing. Like, but no, that's not depression.
Yeah. Now looking back on it, which was now 2 years ago, or something, like I have a whole different perspective. I won't say it was an awful period, but I do feel like now I understand. I understand not just me a little better, a lot better, but I do understand other people a lot better too. Mm-hmm. And I'm oddly really thankful for for losing it for a while, to know that's pretty common and it can happen without you realizing it. And it just makes me just pay attention to myself and to the people around you.
I had when I was talking to a psychiatrist, an old Austrian guy. who could have been an actor. He explained that what I had was an anxious depression. It's the old 1-2 punch. You're not only depressed, you're anxious. And they sort of, you know, they feed this symbiotic. Yeah.
There was a weird, I remember like what was the feeling isn't just like, it isn't simply, you know, nothing brings you joy or delight, the things that normally would, you know. But I remember there was also a low-grade panic to the whole thing. There was a feeling of like, what is wrong and what's happening right now? And so it's you're both like shut down, but your mind is going fast.
It's disengaged, but it's spinning wildly.
Can't sleep, you know. You can barely, I remember like, I couldn't, I could barely leave the house, but I also couldn't sleep, you know. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things. But so trying to illustrate all the little weird, even the comical sides of all that stuff.
So this all began with pharmacy slippers. This straight up conversation.
I'll invent words. I'll invent, like, Vanderlyle. We have a song called Vanderlyle Crybaby Geeks.
Don't start with me on this.
But it's like, there's no such name.
No. But this song, and I was going to come to this later.
To Vanderlyle?
Yeah, unless the power goes out again. I think I understand it. I think I know what it is, or at least I have my version of what it is.
Uh-huh.
But as I've experienced it, it has a whole different weight of symbolism for the moment. Fair enough.
Well, for that is a song that like, I don't even know what the recorded version like on one of our records sounds like anymore. But that was a song that was, it was started out as just like an instrumental sort of piece. At one point, when we were doing those songs, that song we decided to do that, and I think it was at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, which is like a kind of a small, beautiful.
The original Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, the original Grand Ole Opry. And we were there, and I think Bryce was like, why don't we just do that song just acoustic with no amplification and anything, and just like an acoustic sing-along and that was, I don't know how many years ago we did that, and that was such a beautiful, strange moment that song very much changed. And like Space Invader, a whole outro developed out of it. So songs of ours that we put out on the album, they'll still, sometimes it's like the kindergarten version, the very premature version of that song that's on the album. And then they bloom, and as we play them live, they change a lot. The lyrics, sometimes I'll add lyrics and I'll add things and change things, but all of our songs are the album versions are like these snapshots, you know, of a teenage version, and then they keep changing, and that one has really become a really important
song. So how do you decide whether it's in the show or not in the show?
Usually it's like, did we do it last night? Then we shouldn't do it. You know, it's like.
But you didn't do it the night I was there.
We usually do that, but it was like one of those things that if you do something every night, you have to figure out. So we'll do it on and off, and other songs we've learned. But yeah, that moment where you see a band and they're on stage and there's all the equipment, there's the lights and gear, and it's such a production. That it feels a little removed, not unlike me just starting to walk through the crowd to the back of the room, or just turning everything off and just like, you know, in a big arena, just doing an acoustic thing. And it's one of those things that we learned, like you can activate a giant room with these little waves,
right?
Organically,
it's hard for me to establish symbolically what that represents, but it's. You can feel it. It's palpable. Yeah. To have that, it's sort of like, this is something special that we all know, and we're going to, this is how we say goodnight to the band.
Yeah, when you look out and you see it, and I know that because I had the most meaningful moments with pals, and even I went to see shows with my parents, and like when I think of like great times I've had with my parents, many of them are at music at rock shows, and when I think of all the times I felt connected and excited, and you know, just so many of those times were where
are you tired of talking about this? Because when I came upon the history of this song, I thought, I bet it's one of those deals where he's just sick and tired of talking.
No. I mean, that song particularly, Vandalay, it's a little bit about trying to be a professional and trying to be buttoned up or something and slick and not knowing how to do that. And so then when we take that song and do it just is the least slick version where it's just like non-produced, just really raw version.
Yeah.
Whatever, came together. The alchemy of that song worked better than the recorded version. So
it's inexplicable, but it's, wow. But, may I ask you about another song?
Yeah.
Hornets?
Yeah.
I'm captivated by the notion of how do you get rid of hornets before the weekend.
Uh-huh.
I like the qualifier because everybody who has hornets, not necessarily on some sort of timeline.
Right. He's using that.
We'll get to the hornets, Labor Day, we'll get to the hornets.
Yeah.
But we need them gone by the weekend. Explain that to me.
It's all the little, I mean, they're the mundane things you're trying to deal with, but it's also metaphors for all the your anxieties, all your fears. And like,
but by the weekend, we need them gone by Tuesday.
Yeah. We used to not even put the lyrics in the liner notes or anything because I felt like they don't work that way. You know, it's like seeing fish on a beach, words. Song lyrics without the song, without the music, it's like fish flopping on the sand.
Right. So the relationship is essential for the art.
Yeah. And when I'm writing, I never write. I mean, I text myself little phrases in here, but I'm usually writing with the melody and the rhythms in head, and I'll just have stuff on my headphones or just playing in the room. So I'm usually always writing to the music.
Now, do you ever evaluate the finished product as, the music is great, I'm not fond of the lyrics?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
You can
all the time. And a lot of times there's lyrics I don't really like, but the music makes it work,
Yeah, well, this is fun. All right, I'm going to go here.
All right.
Whoa.
This is a... Whoa. Often they're much better than this, but... you know what I'm going to... I think it's all the structural integrity of...
Wow. And akin to cupcakes, eh?
Yeah.
These are not bad.
You like it?
I do like it.
Yeah.